Good morning and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tetragon Investor Call. At this time, all participants are in listening-only mode throughout the whole conference. If anyone should require assistance during the call, press star, then zero on your telephone. Just to remind you, this conference call is being recorded. I would now like to hand over to the Principal, Michael Rosenberg, who is beginning the meeting, and I will be standing by.
Thank you. As one of the principals of the investment manager of Tetragon Financial Group Limited, I'd like to welcome you to our investor call, which will focus on Q2 2010 results and provide an update on progress to date. The format of today's call will be similar to prior calls. Phil Bland, our CFO, will present Tetragon's Q2 2010 results. I will provide a quick overview on our portfolio and key performance metrics and go over questions we've received in the Q&A portion of the call. I'd like to remind everyone that the following contains forward-looking comments, including statements regarding the intentions, beliefs, or current expectations concerning performance and financial condition on the products and markets in which Tetragon invests. Our performance may change materially as a result of various possible events or factors. I may now turn it over to Phil.
Thanks very much, Mike, and my own welcome to the call. As ever, I'm going to start by providing some high-level comments on the results for the last quarter, which are contained in our recently published quarterly report. I'll talk about certain key performance drivers, and while doing so, we'll try to answer some of the questions which have been submitted by investors in recent weeks. The strong start to the year continued into the second quarter, as Tetragon recorded its fourth successive quarter of positive EPS at $0.45 per share, which is equivalent to net income of $55.6 million. Cash generation from the portfolio grew quarter on quarter by around 19% to approximately $61 million, and consolidated NAV per share grew to $7.44. Looking at TFG's statement of operations, there were several underlying positives in the quarter, as our CLO deals continued to benefit from positive developments in terms of reduced underlying losses and increased carrying prices for both defaulted and excess CCC assets. The average IRRs improved from 12.3% to 13.1%, and investment interest income edged up to just over $43 million. Although investment interest income is important, as I've noted on prior calls, when reviewing the performance of TFG's investments, we believe it's useful to combine the interest income line with a change in the realized or unrealized value of investments further down the statement of operations. For the second quarter of 2010, the combined number was a gain of $78.3 million, which was down on the previous quarter of $97.7 million, but is still comfortably higher than the typical quarter prior to the onset of the credit crisis. As we describe in more detail on page eight of the quarterly report, the key steps in the valuation methodology of TFG's CLO portfolio include the projection of future cash flows, which are mainly driven by the assumptions used in the modeling of those cash flows, and then applying an appropriate expected discount rate to future cash flows. We've had a number of questions on this topic in the past and certainly tried to address them, and have had a couple more this quarter, so I'll turn to those now. Last quarter, I took the opportunity to talk about the modeling assumptions themselves, and we recalibrated them at that point in time, and also described in some detail the methodology of reaching an expected discount rate through the ALR process. I'm not going to go through that whole exercise again, but I will touch on one or two pertinent points. Firstly, I'd encourage you to look at the recent quarterly release for further reference, and in particular, in the investment manager's report, we talk about valuation, and I'll approach that on pages eight and nine. In the interim US GAAP financial statements for the mid-year, you'll also find more detail on pages 11 to 13. As we're modeling, amongst other things, forward projections over a multiple-year time period, this is not an exercise in simply recalibrating future assumptions to the latest quarter's historical data. So while there's been a significant improvement in several metrics relevant to Tetragon over the last couple of quarters, which we're very pleased about, we've not further recalibrated our forward-looking assumptions in Q2, and we're mindful of more generally mixed economic and corporate results in the quarter against the backdrop of a continuing uncertain outlook. We'll continue to monitor all external data and look for further evidence of sustained stability and improvement before considering positively adjusting our forward assumptions. Similar considerations are relevant with respect to the accelerated loss reserve fair value adjustments, quite a mouthful, and ALR for short. As previously discussed, the ALR has the effect of applying a higher discount rate than the deal IRRs to their projected cash flows. The ALR on a portfolio basis was approximately $331 million as at the end of Q2, which is broadly unchanged from the end of Q1. That amount has been deducted from the fair value of the portfolios to arrive at the investments in securities at fair value amount of $764.5 million. And you'll find that on the balance sheet in page 14 of the quarterly report. And one of our investors was asking how to track down the ALR and how it linked into the balance sheet. As of June 30th, after taking into account the ALR, the effective discount rate applied on a CLO portfolio-wide basis was close to 30%, which represents a significant spread over BB- rated CLO debt tranches. One of the questions that is asked by a couple of investors is, what is the likely trigger for considering a release of the ALR? Well, one potential trigger for release would be seeing sustained observable evidence of reduction in the risk premium for CLO equity. With little directly observable market data on CLO equity activity to call on, we see periodic transactions, but not very much. We will look at, among other things, the prices and spreads on more senior CLO tranches, where there's a richer data set, to understand trends in pricing. Turning now to some other aspects of the operating performance of PSG within the statement of operations. Operating expenses, including performance fees and a small level of taxes on LTM results, were $22.8 million, which represents approximately 29% of total income and gains. Looking out at some cash flow metrics, the cash generated by the portfolio continues to improve, reflecting, among other things, the strong underlying portfolio performance in Q2, which Michael will provide more colour on later. Total cash receipts from the CLO portfolio were approximately $61 million, or 50 cents per weighted average share, which reflected a continuing increase in the number of deals passing their junior-most OC test. Again, Michael will comment on that more later. When we take into account cash received on other investments, subtract expenses and adjust the net cash out of the hedges, net cash generated in the quarter was $43.2 million, which was the highest level since 2008. So again, encouraging signs and encouraging trends. And against the backdrop of continued strengthening of the CLO portfolio and increased cash flow generation, we were delighted to announce that the board approved an increase in the dividend for the quarter to 8 cents per share, which represents an increase of 33% over the previous quarter. This was achieved while also maintaining the share repurchase programs and extending investment management activities to include Green Oak. And Mike's also going to talk more about the capital distribution policy and the investment in Green Oak later on the call in answer to a number of questions. Finally, from a financial perspective, the acquisition of LCM in the first quarter continues to prove to be successful from a financial perspective. The purchase price has already been repaid several times over, and the business is contributing to the bottom line. We believe that LCM has excellent operational leverage, so the plan is still to continue to add business into LCM, as well as to utilize their team's considerable experience across other aspects of CSG's business, and Michael will reflect on that a little bit in a bit more detail later. So in summary, in terms of the quarter's financial results, they reflect strong earnings, continued growth in cash generation from the portfolio, and that's enabled us to deliver a significant increase in the dividends to investors. And with that, I'll pass back to Mike to comment on Tetragon's portfolio and risk profile.
Great, thanks, Phil. Okay, now I'm going to quickly run through a few portfolio and performance metrics. Portfolio size, as of the end of Q2 2010, our CLO investment portfolio remained at 68 CLO investments managed by 32 different collateral managers, which represents an estimated fair value of approximately $720 million. Additionally, TFG held approximately $44 million in a liquid U.S. bank loan portfolio comprised of various issuers representing $50 million in par amounts. With respect to the CLO and loan portfolio composition, approximately 74.1% of risk capital is invested in U.S. broadly syndicated loans, 6.9% European loans, and 19% U.S. middle market loans. On a look-through basis, Tetragon's exposure to senior secured leverage loans totals over $17.5 billion of par value, spread across approximately 1,650 corporate obligors, the substantial majority of which are U.S. names, with the balance being European. With respect to hedges, we continue to review our hedging strategy for credit exposure and FX principal risk on an ongoing basis as we seek to address identified risks to the extent practical and in a cost-effective manner. I'm going to update on a few key performance metrics that we are focused on. First and foremost is defaults. TFG's lagging 12-month corporate loan default rate fell to approximately 3.6%, outperforming the 4.02% 12-month lagging institutional U.S. loan default rate as reported by S&P LCD. As of the end of Q1 2010, actually the end of Q2, approximately 95% of our CLO investments were passing their Humanos OC tests when evaluated on a percentage of fair value basis. This remained relatively flat from approximately 94% as of the end of Q1 2010. Now, when measured on a percentage of transactions basis, 54 deals, or approximately 84% of the company's CLO investments by number of transactions, were passing their most junior OC test, which is an increase from approximately 80% at the end of Q1 2010, or to say it another way, an additional 3 deals began passing their junior most OC test during the second quarter. And at the end of Q2, the weighted average percentage of corporate obligors rated CCC plus or below fell to 10.5% from 11.1% at the end of Q1. Now I'm going to turn to some of the questions that we've received from investors since our last quarterly update, including those received following our quarterly report release on August 2nd. But before doing so, we'd like to reiterate that we greatly value communication with the company's shareholders and strive to make ourselves available to answer questions to the extent that we are able outside of the quarterly call. We propose to paraphrase or combine questions for purposes of this call and seek to provide information that will be of interest to all call participants and shareholders. To the extent that questions relate to information discussed on the previous quarterly calls or contained in our public disclosures that remain current, we generally don't propose to reiterate that information on this call. Where appropriate, we may also discuss specific questions directly with our relevant investors, although we note that we are not able to necessarily address every matter raised. That being said, in addition to the questions still covered in the finance updates, there are several questions we'd like to cover that can be broken down into 4 basic topics. The first is the Green Oak transaction. Second is use of cash. Actually, 5 topics. Third is LCM. Fourth is portfolio metrics or cash flows. And then finally, fee sharing agreements and corporate actions. I'm going to start with the Green Oak announcement. We received a number of questions on the recently announced Green Oak transaction. Before I get into some of the particulars on that transaction, I think it would be helpful to give everyone some further background on why we're excited about the opportunity. Let me start with some of the thoughts on TFG and follow with a few comments on real estate and Green Oak partners. First, we continue to believe that TFG may have the potential to become more of a broad-based financial services firm that's capable of pursuing what we think are attractive investment opportunities around the world and across multiple asset classes in furtherance of our investment objective. As you recall, since its IPO, the company's investment objective has been and remains to generate distributable income and capital appreciation. Within this broad investment objective, the investment manager has been given the responsibility to determine and modify the specific strategy that it believes may be the most appropriate to achieve the objective, and this strategy has evolved over time as markets and opportunities have also evolved. As noted in our previous disclosures and announcements, we continue to believe that the company may benefit from the firm functioning not only as an investment holding company, but also as a company that owns multiple operating businesses. In our view, the Green Oak transaction is a further step towards realizing this potential in furtherance of the company's investment objectives. We believe that the introduction of the additional recurring asset management fee income similar to LCM will continue to diversify the company's current income and is a positive for the company. Second, we believe that there are very attractive opportunities in the real estate market. In particular, we believe that the market offers widespread distressed opportunities around the globe, which are not only right for investment, but also offer significant advisory opportunities. And with many former significant participants having left the space, or in the process of doing so, there's potentially an attractive opportunity for new entrants. Although we believe there may be sizable and actionable market of opportunities, the asset class generally remains highly localized and opaque, illiquid, and poorly researched, especially outside of the U.S. Thus, effective asset management is key, which brings me to the third point. We believe that the Green Oak founders continue our model of seeking to partner with exceptional managers. All three partners have extensive experience in Morgan Stanley and have now set out to launch their own business independent of any legacy funds. John Carafell was the former global co-head of the real estate investment banking and investing business. Sun Kalsi was the former global head of the real estate investing business. And Fred Schmidt was the former head of the real estate investing business for Asia. Collectively, they previously managed one of the largest real estate investment managers in the world. Now, I'd like to give a little bit more detail on the $100 million co-investment, which was the subject of a few questions. To begin, TFG's co-investment commitment for any Green Oak investment program is capped, although we don't currently expect to have individual investment program commitments at such cap. It is our current expectation that the entire $100 million co-investment would be committed to specific investment programs over the next 2 years, and then such commitments would need to be funded over several years thereafter. This means that once our entire $100 million overall commitment is funded, we currently expect Green Oak to have assets under management of up to $2 billion. Finally, as part of the venture, we're able to make our co-investment on what we consider very favorable terms. And I'll discuss the company's potential uses of cash later on this call and how these potential draws fit into such plans. Information on any specific investment program, commitment, or draw may be available as and when such specific investment programs are closed and funded. The next topic of questions were uses of cash, and we received several questions related to this. Overall, we tried to balance the uses of the company's cash, including returning value to our shareholders in the short term through both dividend and share repurchases. In this regard, we were very happy to have recommended to the board a 33% increase in our quarterly dividend. In addition, we remained active in the market during the quarter, executing on our share buyback program. Both of these uses of cash are balanced against investing in more longer-term attractive growth opportunities like the Green Oak Venture and the potential to grow LCM and our asset management platform. Now, with respect to the Green Oak Venture, as I mentioned previously, we expect that the $100 million co-investment commitment will be committed to specific investment programs and funded over several years. We believe that gives us flexibility in deploying capital towards other attractive growth opportunities as well. Now, with respect to our LCM and our asset management platform, we stated in prior calls our desire to grow LCM, which continues to interest us. In addition, we expect to continue to explore other potential acquisitions to grow our asset management platform both within and beyond the CLO and loan market. While the new issue CLO market has been very quiet for some time now, it is starting to show some signs of life with a few transactions getting done earlier this year. Each of these deals were generally done for reasons other than the traditional arbitrage motivations. For example, they were either refinancing existing portfolios or structures, or just outright financing trades for a counterparty. However, we believe there may be an opportunity to bring a new deal to the market based on the attractiveness of just the arbitrage. Any new deal will certainly look different from previous transactions, and primarily that relates to the amount of leverage in the deals and the size of the transactions. In addition, we will continue to review opportunities to support our existing CLO investments through capital contributions or other strategies, as well as potentially taking advantage of the secondary CLO investment market. And we'll also continue to examine investment opportunities in assets and asset classes within and beyond the leveraged loan market. Next topic is LCM, where we received a few questions. We believe the integration of LCM has gone very well. As I mentioned previously, they have assisted us in the unlevered loan portfolio of approximately $60 million for TFG. We also remain very happy with their performance. And in addition, we are exploring the possibility of a new issue CLO, which, if executed, could be a very exciting development. However, unfortunately, due to applicable requirements, we are unable to disclose any further details of such a transaction at this time, but we hope to do so when and if appropriate. Next topic had to do with portfolio metrics and future cash flows, and specifically about deal testing or OC tests. As you can see from our release, we introduced several new charts, including one that shows the percentage of our deals passing their junior most OC test and our gross investment and operating cash flows. These metrics are correlated, and thus hopefully gives investors additional information in determining the sustainability of our operating cash flows going forward. We state in the quarterly release that on a percentage of transaction basis, 84% of our deals are passing their junior most OC test, and that for U.S. CLOs, 94% of our deals are passing. Thus, the strength in this trend has been driven by our U.S. CLOs, as European deals still have lagged our U.S. deals in terms of recovery. If we do see signs of European CLOs improving to the point whereby more European deals begin passing their junior most OC test, that would have a positive impact on our cash flows going forward. And then finally, we also received a question related to fee sharing arrangements and corporate actions within our portfolio. Part of the initial strategy for our CLO portfolio was to take majority positions of the equity sponsors, which may allow us to significantly influence the vote on various matters and generally to give us a seat at the table in corporate transactions. We believe that this strategy has proved to be very effective and profitable in several instances. The most obvious one, obviously, was our the position we were in the LCM acquisition due to our majority interest in the equity. In addition, we've had several instances where there have been keen-end breaches, acquisition of one of our CLO managers, or the ability to influence a corporate action within a particular CLO document. And during the second quarter, we experienced an additional two such situations. In the first instance, one of our European CLO managers made the decision to exit the loan business. Currently, and for various reasons, the European loan market is not an ideal fit for LCM, but we participated in the negotiations with the existing manager to sub-advise their CLO management on two of our transactions to another one of our existing European loan managers. Because our consent was required for this, we came to an economically attractive agreement whereby Tetragon receives a percentage of various CLO management fees going forward. In the second instance, the parent company of one of our U.S. CLO managers was acquired by another entity. In this situation, and because of, among other things, our position in the applicable CLOs, we came to an agreement whereby, again, we will receive certain economics going forward based on the future management fees. In each of these situations, the increased economics we receive increases the return on our investment and or creates additional fee-based revenues for the company. That brings us to the end of the Q&A portion of the call, and we hope you found it helpful. We'd like to thank everyone for joining this call, and as always, please do not hesitate to contact us directly with any questions. We look forward to speaking with you in the future.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation today. This concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect the line. Thank you.